I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
It's Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
All right, baseball isn't boring, and I know that that this is being screamed and yelled from coast to coast, from top to bottom of this great country and beyond, and the entire world. But I know this because officially, our West Coast / Hollywood Baseballs and Boring correspondent is with us, Nate Cordry. Nate, how are you?
Thank you, Rob. I'm really grateful to be anointed your West Coast Hollywood correspondent. I think we're still negotiating the deal. I think there was some issue with the money, but we're going to figure that out. I think I'm going to be a real asset to you because I know no one, but I love baseball. So I think it's going to work out.
I feel like if anyone can just randomly go on television movie sets and hand out T-shirts, it's you. And by the way, yes, is that agreed? Yes.
Again, that's going to need to be negotiated.
Okay. All right. Well, here's the thing that's going to put it all over the top, Nate. Ready? Okay. A koozie. Baseball isn't boring koozie. I mean, you've been in some high leverage conversations, negotiations, but has anyone tried to put it over the top with a baseball isn't boring koozie?
No, never, never. I think people want to hold on to their pride. And they don't fall to the universe of the koozie. It's a different, it's sort of like the, kind of like the 2 year, like community college, like, but you're studying like general studies. You're just trying to figure out how to like put one foot in front of the other. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you do look, you beverages need to be kept cold.
I mean, this cuts to the chase. I could offer you cars and I could offer you trailers and I could offer you all kinds of things, but this just do something that's actually practical, keeping your beverage cold or hot.
This has been an issue with me. I'm always, you know, I'm putting my drinks in the microwave and the oven. I don't know why I do it. I just keep on making this mistake, but the koozie is going to put me over the edge. So I appreciate your commitment. Thank you, Rob.
All right. Well, here, our relationship's already off on a good foot. But Nate, I really appreciate it, man. Like you clearly, you know, You're omnipresent on Twitter, on social media, with all the beat writers know you, and obviously a lot of people know you from all your fine work, doing all the things that you've done, TV and movies, and going back to the Daily Show, going back to Colby Sawyer, going back to Weymouth High. I mean, come on, let's go. By the way, this power rank, I want to power rank the your baseballs and boring moments at Weymouth in a second. Right, it's Weymouth, right? I'm not mixing up high schools.
No, it's not Wayland. It's Weymouth. Yeah, that's Weymouth. The usual mistake.
Okay, so but I really appreciate you jumping on for this cause. I just appreciate talking with you because I love on you on social media. We've been back and forth on social media a little bit, But I knew that I would love talking baseball with you. You're sitting there with the Red Sox jersey on. You have the Fenway Park sign in the back, all of that. So I know that you love this game. I know that you love sports. I know that you love Boston sports. But, you know, being out there and wherever a Hollywood correspondent lives, you are there spreading the word. And so that has not left you from the time that you left Weymouth High.
It's a strange thing. Leaving home to, you know, a lot of people leave home to go to school, but some people return to their roots and find work. But after college, I moved to New York. I lived in New York for 6 years and then moved to Los Angeles after that. And I've been here ever since. And it's strange. You find, like any time you move, you find your community. But a lot of my community has been based around East Coast people. There's just a different dynamic between East Coast and West Coast and Midwest folks. There's a sarcasm. There's a biting wit. There's self-deprecation, some more darkness, I think, behind the comedy, if you're an East Coaster, specifically if you're a New Englander. And I don't know if that's if that comes from, this is a long debated point, if it comes from, if it's just the weather, or if it's sort of like this New England puritanical universe that still exists in New England.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
The pilgrims are long gone, but all this stuff gets passed down from generation to generation. So there's this like strict parochial sort of behavior, I think. And you're drawn to other people who've grown up in those environments. So I have a lot of friends. I have a wonderful community of friends out here who are New Englanders. And we really enjoy going to Dodger games. Dodger Stadium is great. Dodger Stadium's a blast.
Oh, so good.
It's great. But I've never, I don't love the Dodgers. I root for them. I watch them on Sportsnet, whatever they are on. But I don't have a passionate love for them or any team out here. And it's always strange. I was talking to a friend, remember having this conversation with a friend who's from Detroit, and they became a huge Clipper fan. And they're like, they love the Clippers, and they've like, they don't follow the Pistons. I was like, how is that possible? How can you abandon, which is totally puritanical, like root for whatever team you fucking want, you know? There are no rules. But I was born to be like, you know, oh, you're gonna root for the Phillies now? How, you think you're better than me? That's sort of like the New England, you know, point of view. So I carry that deep in my soul.
So when you go to the Dodgers game, I always find this interesting. You know, it's like, it's different everywhere. Like, it is so different everywhere in baseball. We're seeing it now, you know, as the World Series is sort of unfolding at Citizens Bank Park. Like, talk about release the Philly. I mean, release the Philly and all these people. You went from, like, I looked at clips from the middle of the year, it was half full, apathetic. And now it's like, oh, we're Philly and we do this and we do that, which they should. It's just like with Fenway. Like, in Nate, I mean, you grew up going to Fenway. And so I guess the question I have is, having sort of been on both sides of that world, when you go to the Dodgers games, like the cliche is, oh, show up late, leave early. But it is that A, annoying, like anything about it annoying because you want it to be like Fenway, or is it just different?
It's just different. I think when I first showed up, I had my arms crossed and I said, this isn't Fenway. This isn't Fenway. There are no troughs in the men's bathroom. That's the one thing that I miss. I really think it's a shame. I don't know
who doesn't.
Where are the troughs now? Are they at the New England Sports Museum?
You know what? I think they actually are.
No.
I think they actually are. So two things I think are there that are of our note. The troughs I think are there, and Pedroia gave me the screw to his foot. And I said, well, what do I do with this?
What the hell?
So I gave it to them. So all the great things that make New England sports what they are, troughs and things that hold bones together.
My Pedroia signed jersey is
not. Oh, is it? Well, let me ask you this. I'll let you finish your thought first.
Yeah. There's definitely when I first came here, because I had this sort of, and I lived in New York for a long time. I never was a fan of New York teams, but I identified with my experience in New York was incredible, and I sort of like found myself in New York. And so coming out here is just a completely different way of life. But they always get compared, New York and LA, because they have they're similar bases of entertainment, but they're just completely different experiences. And so I picked on Dodger fans and sort of crossed my arms and said, this is bullshit. This is, you know, I can't believe it's 72 degrees. This is miserable. The sun is beautiful. I'm staring at a beautiful mountain range. But I just like accept that Dodger fans are different because their lives are different. The main issue, I think, and maybe I'm giving them too much of too much credit, but public transportation is a real problem here. There's a bus system, but there is no underground. There is a subway, but no one takes mm-hmm. it, and it has like 10 stops. And there is no above ground trolley that goes to Dodger Stadium, so it's buses. And the bus system is rough. You can't really count on it, so you have to drive. And it's a driving city. You know, there weren't freeways in the 50s and 60s, but this money from Detroit flooded into Los Angeles to like the city council. Like, let's not build a subway. Let's build freeways so we can sell cars. So there are freeways everywhere. So the car community, it's really hard. You have to leave really early to beat traffic. Everyone is driving. I don't know what the percentage of Fenway what the crowd is like, what the percentage of
I mean, it's honestly just because of, you know how it is, just because of parking, this is scaring away people from, I mean, they would like to drive, but you know, the one thing Dodger Stadium has a lot more of than Fenway is parking. But anyway, So it's a different scene.
Yeah. Completely different scene. I don't pick on them as much as I did when I first started here. I guess I'm getting soft, but that happens when you live in California for 16 years.
Come on. No, I know that you're there. Like, well, let me take you back to when the Red Sox played the Dodgers. Did you go in any of those games?
I did. I was lucky enough to go to the World Series.
Yeah. The World Series.
Yeah. I was able to go to the clinching game. It was amazing.
So this is the ultimate, right? This is the ultimate, like, you've gone from, oh, it's 75. I can't deal with you fans, you Dodger fans. You're so bad. But now, obviously, the Dodger fans are feeling themselves, and we're real fans, and we're in it as much as you are. But you're there, and you get to the last pitch. Chris Sale strikes out Machado, and you're like, yeah, man, screw you. Screw you in your Dodger ways.
Inaccurate. did not tell anyone. You know, screw
that
you.
Didn't come out of your mouth. Screw you and your Dodger ways.
I did not. None of those things were screened. But I appreciate you making that assumption about me and what I would do in that situation. Right now, you're watching me cycle through my phone because I have a video. Of that very moment of the final pitch. Yes. Which I believe was October. It doesn't matter. Anyway, you asked me a question. And my answer is this. That was game five, right? Did they win it in five?
Yeah.
Four or five? Five.
It was, I believe. Yes, it was five. Yeah, because they would return. Yeah.
It was three. Yeah, we were up 3-1. So we walked into that place. Like, it was already a bit of a haunted house. Like, they had a look in their eyes like, it's kind of over. And we had, of course, you remember, a very enthusiastic first inning. And the collective shoulders of the entire stadium just kind of like, they weren't in it. They weren't in it. And I don't think it was because they're passive fans. I think they already knew. And I forget who they were pitching, but it wasn't Kershaw. Though that probably wouldn't have helped them considering back then his playoff woes were
no, well documented. It was the game before. Man, I have a terrible memory of this, but Rich Hill, obviously Rich Hill game when they took him out.
Yeah.
you know, which, by the way, Rich Hill's on the podcast tomorrow. He's our you're the West Coast Hollywood correspondent. Rich Hill on this breaking news, Nate. Rich Hill has agreed every single week to do Players Only Thursday. So Rich Hill is basically taking over the podcast.
Wow. Is he interviewing? Is it just him?
Yeah, and I'll be there to sort of guide. But the idea is, and the hope is, and again, maybe by the time people are listening, this has already been out. I don't know. But so he brings on somebody. And, you know, I told him this. I said, I can interview you. Like, that's fine. But I'd rather you just chop it up with somebody who lives the same life. And I think this one, he's trying to get David Freese to basically, the topic would be what it's like to be awesome at the biggest time, you know?
Yeah, yeah. What does that feel like? How does that change your career?
And also, like, how do you function, right? I mean, how do you function in that way? But anyway, I want to come back to, being there covering it, you see the people, you see the Red Sox fans when it's over, sort of congregate toward the dugout, like, yeah, we're the best. See, like, we can't run on the field. Like, if they have a moat at Dodger Stadium, it's so weird, you know? It's like the area you can't get near. But
yes.
I don't know if you were one of those people that, or you just said you just took off and so went to the Hollywood Hills to reflect on
no. your action. We did not rush down to the behind the Red Sox dugout. We were behind their dugout, but probably, I don't know, like 20 rows, 25 rows back. We were in the sort of loge under the overhang from the first deck. It was my wife and I and my brother and my mother and her wife who were out here visiting. So there was there was five of us and we got five seats together. But we stayed there for probably a half hour and watched them roll out the stage, and the truck was driven on who Steve Pierce, did he win the,
Steve Pierce.
And just watched them come out and celebrate and seeing the trophy and handing the trophy over to John Henry So we watched all of that. We didn't like rush down in front of
it. But being there is cool, right? I mean,
it was incredible. I'd never been to a clinching game before. I think the biggest game that I'd been to before was game three of the 2004 ALCS when the Red Sox lost 19-8.
Oh, really? And,
Hideki Matsui hit a ball that still hasn't landed.
What a shitty game to go to. Holy mackerel.
Oh my God. I was working at the time. I was rehearsing a play in New York, a tour of a play. And I think that game, the only reason I was there because I think that game was on a Monday. And so I had a day off. Mondays are dark in the theater. And so I took a train or I drove to Boston. I took my dad. I got tickets. We were sitting way up in the right field grandstand. I remember the Cow Sills came out to start the game and sang some song about hair because Johnny Damon had long hair and the fucking national media could not get over that a ball player had long hair. And we're like, what the fuck are the Cow Sills doing here singing hair? What the fuck? Some irrelevant folk band.
You're down 2-0 and you're losing 10-0. What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. Bring out James Taylor at least, Carly Simon, someone. And that we left in the top of the eighth. I can't believe we lasted that long.
I know.
And we got to the car. We got into the car. We turned the ignition on, and the radio came up. And Castiglione, it was just as the game ended. And Castiglione was like, "And that'll wrap it up. This game has mercifully come to an end. The Red Sox lose 19-8. We'll be back at the Shaw's and Star Market." After whatever post game show, don't drive off the Mystic River Bridge. And that was so bleak. I think I took a train home that night to go to work the next day. It was a tough, but you know what? It all worked out a few days later. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, history would suggest that it did work out a few days later. Absolutely. Before I forget, you had mentioned your Pedroia jersey. And I always find this question fascinating. where, you know, you live in a world where you know a lot of people, you work with a lot of people I would love to meet. I would love just to interact with and every, and I'm sure I work and am around a lot of people that you would love to meet, right? Correct. And so it's so weird how, you know, I can see these players and like, it's, for me, it's all about business. It's the same thing we do. Like, it's all about business. Like, 'cause I see, and this is my job. But then you get outside that world and you're like, oh my goodness. My one, which I default to, and this is a terrible one, which is I met Shannon Elizabeth right after American Pie. Right. So like, I literally, like, for a guy who was interviewing everybody, you know, whoever, it didn't matter, I couldn't speak, you know, like, excellent job. Yeah. And she was dating a guy who was just in the perfect storm. And, you know, and yeah. So anyway, but so I don't know if there's an athlete that you got a chance to meet that's along those lines.
You know, it's an interesting thing. It's a strange thing that's a really interesting question, because I'm assuming you were drawn to this job because in your soul, you love sport.
Oh my
God.
If you could tell me, Nate, if you could tell me, like, I would be on the Nesson set on a semi-regular basis, chopping it up with Jim Rice, like, or how about this? Like, one time taking a private jet with Jerry Remy. I mean, those were my guys. That was my team. That was the 78 Red Sox. That was my first team. But yeah, anyway, sorry.
It's a strange thing. You find yourself as a, dare I say it, a peer. Mm-hmm. The wall completely breaks down. You have this idolization of these people who you've admired, and all of a sudden they're sitting next to you and you guys you're doing the same thing. I've been so lucky in my, knock on wood, in my career to cross paths with people I really admire. And it happened yesterday. I was sitting in a writer's room rehearsing for a show that I'm working on next week. And the people on either side of me, I admire really greatly, and I get to watch them work and create. And I was their peer for a little bit. And
you're not name dropping.
The only reason that I can't, and I'll tell you after the podcast, is because it's sort of, it's a the production is semi-secretive.
Okay. I like it. That spices it up even more as well. Okay. So is there a time, another time that you looked up next to, like I said, like I would be on a plane with, and I was on a plane with Jerry Remy for 2 hours and we were talking about Ralph Houk. It's like, and so I don't know, like if you had that, yes, sort of thing. Okay.
Yeah. The answer is yes. 1,000 times.
Yeah.
1,000 times. Starting at the Daily Show. That was my first big job, and I was in joke meetings with Jon Stewart, trying to figure out a joke, trying to break down a joke. It's math, trying to figure out the math so the joke works. Working with doing bits with Matthew Perry, during Studio 60, which was a show I did, an NBC show that brought me out to Los Angeles 16 years ago. Last year, I had the great fortune of being on set for, you know, 10 hours with Sean Penn and Julia Roberts and me. The three of us were in two scenes together.
That's pretty good.
And between takes, they were telling stories. And Sean Penn was telling about... was talking about, you know, Marlon and how Marlon idolized the real actor that Marlon was obsessed with. And my fucking, I'm like, holy fucking shit. Where are we? Brando stories? Holy fuck. It's like Paul Muni. Paul Muni was the actor that Brando idolized the most. He put Paul Muni above everyone else. I was like, yeah. Okay. Go ahead. What else? So that happens. That is a strange, really strange part.
So to flip that, has there ever been an interaction with an athlete where you felt sort of like, because that's obviously more of a hit and run sort of thing, unless you're hanging at their house.
the GM, maybe, I guess, I'm not sure if it's his official title, but Brian Halloran.
Brian Halloran. Oh, yeah. He's from Weymouth?
He's from Weymouth, and he graduated, maybe they didn't graduate together, but they both worked at Caldor. Remember Caldor?
Sure.
He and my brother worked at the same Caldor on, I think, Route 18 in Weymouth in, 1985, six. And they graduated high school at the same time. And so they stayed in touch, like, vaguely over the years. And we were home one time. I was doing a baseball road trip with my dad, which I've done a couple times.
That's awesome.
And we finished in Boston, of course. And my brother reached out to Brian and said, hey, we're all in Boston. We're going to go to the game. And Brian was like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fully set you up. And I thought, okay. And we didn't tell my dad. And we got there like an hour before the game. And Brian met us and took us into the player's entrance, into the clubhouse. And my dad was like, where are we going? We can't go in here. I was like, no, it's all right, Dad. It's Brian, runs the team. And we walk past the security guys from Quincy, and he's giving us shit because we're from Weymouth. And all of a sudden the door opens and we're in the fucking clubhouse. And we're walking by and Ortiz is at the end, like, polishing his bats. And Rob's like, holy shit, Ortiz is doing some real Ortiz stuff at the other end of this room. Oh my God. We walk in, he walks us straight into Tito's office. And because I was such a psycho Red Sox fan, I knew he and Pedro played cribbage. Yeah. And cribbage is a game that I used to play with my dad and my grandfather. And so I sent him like this beautiful cribbage board out of nowhere, just a psycho fan, like Tito Francona, Fenway Park, Boston, Massachusetts, wrote a little note. He called me, left a message saying, oh, thank you so much. Me and Petey are going to use it today. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you're such a fan. Thanks for doing it. And so I walked in. He's like, "Oh, you're the maniac who sent me a courage board." I shook his hand. My dad is just like, "Fuck!" He's stunned. He's like, "What am I doing?" And then Brian's like, "Do you know Rob?" And he's like, "Oh my God, yeah, of course. You're from Hot Tub Time Machine. We watched Hot Tub Time Machine on the bus ride from Fort Myers to Jupiter, wherever the fuck, during spring training." He's like, "Get Petey in here. Petey loves that movie." In comes Pedroia. "Holy shit, it's Lou," which is my brother's character in Hot Tub. "It's fucking Lou. Go get Wake. Get Wake. Holy shit. Fucking Lou." Every word out of his mouth was fucking. "Fucking Lou. Fucking Lou's here. Holy fucking shit. Lou. I fucking love that movie." And my brother's like, "Oh my God." Pedroia shaking my hand. In comes Wakefield, who's pitching in like 45 minutes. He's got a sleeveless t-shirt on. He's like, "Hey, man, how you doing? Hey, Lou, all right." He was like so chill and laid back and just like the fucking greatest guy. And again, my father's head is spinning like in The Exorcist. And then he takes us out onto the field, down the tunnel from the clubhouse into the
dugout,
into the dugout, yeah, onto the field. So I had a moment like that, and I couldn't, and Pedroia didn't know me from the, from anyone, but he knew my brother. And so it was just like, we all got photos with him. It was nuts. We ended up after we went to the game, Francona got thrown out of the game for arguing balls and strikes, which was amazing. And the game's over, the Red Sox lost sadly, but we dropped off my brother at his hotel. He was flying out the next morning. And I went back to Tewksbury, where my dad lives, and we were just sitting in his kitchen. We were drinking some whiskey, and we were just kind of just like pondering, like we couldn't believe that we're let into this magical inner sanctum in Fenway Park, a place that you only dream about and read about, and where these like immortal humans live and breathe and prepare. And I was like, "Can you believe that?" And he's like, I can't believe Pedroia knew who Rob was. And
first of all, that's an awesome story. And I think that, if you take all of it, like you're talking about your conversation with Sean Penn about Marlon Brando. And I'm thinking like, that's the equivalent of what you're talking about, of like talking with Pedroia and Francona. That's why I find this so fascinating. But you also mentioned the feeling that you have when you get in the inner sanctum of a baseball stadium in or a clubhouse or something like that. I remember, Nate, when I was interning at NESN, stepping on the field for the first time, and I don't know what it was. It was like, and I'm not usually like this. I'm like, oh, this is weird. And I started thinking about it. I'm thinking, yeah, because that's what I watched on TV. Like, and now I'm actually stepping on it, right? And so there's that dynamic. And I'm going to come back to sort of the glorious game of baseballs and boring and all that stuff. You know, I told you that we're doing this, or we did this book with Joe Kelly. And the whole premise is, it's a damn near perfect game, reclaiming America's pastime. And you know, it's partly Joe talking about what's right and what's wrong and what's great about baseball, but he interviews people along the way. And so he interviews like Rob Lowe and Mark Hoppus of Blink 182 and all these people. And there's so many different avenues to baseball, but there's a lot of similarities about walking into a ball. I mean, John Hamm, I saw at the All-Star game, I asked him the same thing. Same answer. Andy Cohen, same answer. What do you remember? I remember walking into the ballpark for the first time, right? And I remember how everything was so green, and I remember how the uniforms were whiter than I could ever imagine, like, uniforms could be or clothing could be. And, like, I remember that. And so all the stuff that you're talking about, like, I think that, and, you know, that's at a different level, but this is the common thread, right? It's crazy.
Absolutely. I walked up. I remember the concourse that I walked up, and every time I go back to Fenway to see a game, I always try to walk up the same concourse that I walked up when I was a, you know, 8-year-old boy, and my dad took me and my brother, my sister, my mom all to a game against the Brewers. This is in 1985 or something. And I remember seeing the Green Monster, of course, because I was on the first base side, so I was facing left field. The white of the jerseys. But for me, it was, and I guess this is the sense that is so tied to your path, is smell. And for me, it was the smell. It was the fresh cut. It was fresh cut grass, dirt, and a combination, no joke, of urine and cigar smoke. And this is, again, this is in 1985, where you could smoke, you know, people were smoking cigars and cigarettes like every fucking seat. It was insane.
It all comes back to the cross, by the way, doesn't it? It all comes back to the cross.
It always does. And my first, I've never been more terrified. That was the first real horrifying moment I had with seeing another human's body. And you know, because I was waist high. And I'm next to my dad. I'm like, I'm not going up there by myself. And he didn't have to go. He's like, all right, I'll take you up there. And I, you know, you look to your right, and it's, you know, it's a dozen. Just hanging, you know, all shapes and sizes. It's a terrifying, the human body is a horrifying thing to see up close for the first time as a child. You know what I'm saying, Rob?
Yes, well, the glorious game of baseball is basically morphs itself into life in so many ways.
It's the fabric of our lives. It's not cotton. It's baseball.
It's baseball. Thank you, Urinals. Thank you, Trops. But yeah, I mean, so when you were talking about meeting those guys and being there, and like you said, the smell of cigars and urine and everything, I mean, that's what it is, man. Like, and it's so weird because, you know, we talked about, and this sort of comes back to the conversations that we've had about baseball. And I talked Tito, like we interviewed Tito for the book, and I covered Tito, but it was great to this a couple months ago to sit down and ask him, and he said the same thing a lot of everybody else said. Everyone's going to slow down and just appreciate what's going on. And one thing, Nate, is that so Joe interviews Manfred, and Manfred said something that I hadn't really even thought about, but we brought it up on the podcast a few times, which is baseball is the best game to go to. And you think about it, he's right. I mean, this isn't a spin. Like, he's right, because you go to a basketball game, a hockey game, it's constant action. Like, it's a social event to go to a baseball game. You talk, you analyze. Oh, wait. Why, someone just hit a home run? There you go. I don't know if you agree or not.
I completely agree. I have no interest in going to NFL games because the television product is just so good.
Yeah.
There's no need to go to an NFL game. I'm not a huge NBA fan, and the experience of going, if you're sitting close, I guess it could be fun, but there's the problem is that there's a clock. The clock is in charge. In baseball, there is no clock. And I think that changes the whole scenario. And also every stadium is different. Every basketball or hockey stadium you go into, you have to follow these same parameters. And there's nothing charming about the stadium. Maybe one or two or three are charming in their presentation. But that's the magic of baseball. That's why you go to parks in Pittsburgh and Chicago and, you know, Denver and in San Francisco and Seattle. You go to these parks because the parks are
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I'm trying to find the word. Like, they're their own experience, just experiencing sure. The park. Like, I remember the first time realizing that not every stadium looked like Fenway and how that applies to the game. I remember that blew my mind. But it is part of going to a baseball game is the communal aspect. It is slow. There's all this wonderful tension though, because there's so much that doesn't happen between plays, but the buildup of tension, the anticipation of what is going to happen when the pitch is thrown. Is the runner going to steal? Is this a hit and run? Is the guy in the bullpen ready to come in? It's a 1-2 pitch. Like, what is he going to throw here? Because he just threw two fastballs in a row. If you're really paying attention, you can nerd out on every moment, which brings me to one of the best baseball books ever written, which is Nine Innings.
Oh, yeah.
You haven't read.
Sure.
Dan Okrent or Okrent?
Yeah, Okrent. Yeah.
It's an incredible book about he chooses one game. And he analyzes every moment in every pitch in the game and draws out each chapter, I think, is an inning or a half inning. It's an inning.
Yeah.
And he goes into the minutia of every single moment and every step and every. So if you really pay attention, you can get lost in it. But there's something really fun about being bored for a second, about relaxing, being passive, eating a hot dog, drinking a beer, enjoying being outside in the spring, especially if you've suffered through a winter.
Yeah, soaking in the urine and the cigar smell.
Exactly. Nothing brings it back.
But it's, you're so right. That's a great book. And I do so, and I appreciate your time. I don't know, you know, we spent a lot of time here and I really appreciate it. But I do, you had mentioned in our communication about that you're getting your master's in English.
In English, yes. English.
And wanted to talk a little bit about the baseball book dynamic. And like you just mentioned one. And I guess, you know, look at that. Look at that. It's a big stack of – I don't see – see, here's the thing, though, Nate. I don't see Chasing Steinbrenner or Deep Drive, the Mike Lowell story. So that means those are the two books that I wrote before this one.
I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. No. What that tells me is that in the package, along with the koozie and the T-shirt, another T-shirt – will be those books, along with A Damn Near Perfect Game, March 14th. So do you want to, so you're getting your master's. Would you want to write a baseball, like, would you want to write something like that? Would you want to write a baseball book?
I don't think so. I don't think my talents lie in writing. I'm getting the master's because I'm really beyond sports, reading and, you know, sort of like analysis of literature is really, really fun. I it was something that I hungered to do and I didn't have an outlet for beyond like book clubs with my friends. And I found some classes online and got serious about it. And during the pandemic, when I wasn't working, I sort of applied and was like, all right, I'm going to do this for real. So I don't think my future is in writing a book. Maybe if I would write a book, it would probably be about like the life of like a character actor, you know, and that book has been written 1,000 times, but maybe I could bring something new to it. But I don't think I know enough about the ins and outs of baseball to write a book.
Well,
about
I mean,
baseball.
I think that this is a great thing about it is that, you know, I think that your stories that you've already told in this conversation, that's the book, like that's the book.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, and of course, it's the marketing and everything else. And the publishing world is a whole nother podcast. But it's what would you be your, I love power ranking, your top three baseball books?
Well, I brought the hard copies that I have here in my house. I brought along six of my favorites.
Okay.
And if I was going to have to choose the top three.
Well, you can do six.
I'll do six really quickly. And these are in no particular order. Yeah. The Sandy Koufax bio that Jane Levy wrote is incredible. Mm. And I immediately became obsessed with Sandy Koufax and like wanted a Koufax jersey and a signed Koufax picture. And I'm fascinated by him and his entire story. It's an incredible biography. Nine Innings, of course, if you are hardcore baseball nut and want to get into every single moment and every pitch and every move and every step, this is the book to read. If you're a Red Sox fan, this is a great time to pick up a book about baseball, right? Because the Red Sox season, of course, is over. Mm-hmm. And the World Series is happening, but you want that fix.
Sure.
The Long Ball is an incredible book about the 75 season.
Yeah.
And all the ins and outs and focusing on specifically the Red Sox. And a lot of great stories about that World Series, which is arguably the greatest World Series. David Halberstam, rest in peace. Teammates, of course, is a brilliant book, especially if you're a Red Sox fan. My favorite baseball writer, besides Updike writing the piece about Ted Williams, Hub fans bid kid adieu, which I think is the single greatest piece of sports writing ever written in the New Yorker. Look that up, folks. Mm-hmm. Is The Summer Game. We just lost Roger. Mm-hmm. His takes on baseball and just being a human living on earth is he's a fantastic writer. As far as fun, and this is not about the Red Sox, it's about our hated enemy. Jonathan Mahler wrote The Bronx is Burning, which is, it's a book about baseball.
Was that 78 or no?
This is 78, 77.
So, So obviously the Bronx is burning. I remember was the ESPN show they did.
Yeah. Remember that? Not great. Not great.
But here's, let me tell you a story about that though. It was that was responsible for the strangest clubhouse I've ever seen. The Red Sox beat the Indians in Cleveland. And after the game, everyone was, for whatever reason, glued to watching that on TV. Like, if there was 25 guys, 20 of them were sitting there, you know, not getting ready to leave. It was dead quiet. I think John Lester did his interview. And whereas writers were like, huh? What's and they're just watching this thing. It was so bizarre.
Wow. Well, they were just fascinated by how Hollywood would tell their story, but them as ball players and what.
Right. And like. I think it's like, not to, you know, listen, I think that it was the sweet spot for them in terms of simplicity too. Right. That's a nice way of saying it was, you know, it's not next level stuff, but yeah.
It's not frontline. No one's watching frontline.
There's not a lot of frontline in the clubhouse.
Maybe Sean Doolittle. I don't know. I feel like he's a bookish coach.
There's always a couple. But before you go, I have to ask, this is for my own edification. One of the greatest pieces of cinematic backdrop was in a movie you were in. It was the movie The Heat. Okay. The painting on the wall.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Of course.
Where can I get that?
That Paul Feig has that. Okay. He has that. I on the set.
Can you describe it first of all?
It's like it's sort of like a velvet Elvis painting, but it is a picture of Jesus Christ dressed in a Red Sox jersey hitting a home run at Fenway Park. And it's so brilliant. And the whole set, everyone on set, everyone in the family in that movie was from Massachusetts, besides Michael Rapaport. Everyone around that table, Joe McIntyre, myself, Bill Burr, Jamie Dembo and Jessica Chaffin, and the parents as well, Jane Curtin. Everyone was from Massachusetts. So the casting director, who was also from Massachusetts, Allison Jones, who's like the preeminent comedy film casting director, I think she's from Norwell. She was very conscious of casting people who were from Boston and who understood that behavior. So we got on set, and that house that we shot in was a house, just like an abandoned house in Dorchester. And we started, it was like, oh, how do we get this? And Paul was like, no, it's mine. I already called it. Forget about it. You're not taking this home. This is too. But they, you know, like they hired a couple of artists, scenic designers, whose job it is to walk into a room a week, 2 weeks, a month before the cameras and the actors show up, and to dress it, to set dress this room so it's appropriate. And they spend hours and hours and hours. And I don't know whose idea it was, but probably Katie Dippold, who wrote the movie, was probably her idea. It's like, this family is maniacs. How do we, they should have, you know, and they're obviously like practicing Catholics and they're Irish Catholic. And so we should have paintings of Christ as Larry Bird and 10 Williams on the wall. But we were like fighting to take those home. And Paul called them, sadly.
Listen, I honestly tell people this. I said, it's one of my favorite scenes. If that's remotely, if you're scrolling through, what are the options on TV? If The Heat's on, so I'll, first of all, I'll click on it. And then I like the movie, but I'll fast forward to that scene. It is one of my favorite. It just hits a sweet spot for me. Are you or are you not a knock?
Most of that scene was improvised. He set up, he was really smart. He gave us, there was a rough idea of the scene. But we did like one take of what was written. And then he set up cameras really wide in the room so he could capture all of us. If anyone said anything, he'd have it. And Sandy Bullock had to sit there like a fucking champ all day for 10 hours and just have us like confuse her gender, say that she was ugly, say that she was stupid, and had like she just had to sit there and take it. And she was such a champ. It was so much fun shooting that scene because it was all completely improvised, and it was a table full of comedians and improvisers. So
it's so good.
It was a dream.
So good. Hey, listen. There's nobody I'd rather have represent our Baseball Isn't Boring brand than you, in whatever way you can represent it. So it's been a blast, man. It really has been a lot of fun. I could talk to you about 4 hours about all the stuff, and maybe we can do a whole book segment another time. I would like to do that.
So. Yeah, next time I'll come prepare and we'll do a little book club on baseball books.
I like that. Also, book club editor, Baseball Isn't Boring brand. Excellent.
Okay, that's going to cost you. That's another...
Another koozie.
Exactly. It's three more koozies.
All right,
been a pleasure, Rob. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.